We're talking about youth sports leagues and how they're operating or not amid the pandemic. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kahn. Thanks for being here. For thousands of Wisconsin kids, this will be the summer without their team sports. But for other youth, the games have already started. With unanswered questions about kids and COVID-19, parents, coaches, physicians, they have differing opinions about what is safe. Parents, does your child play on a baseball team? Have games started? What are practices like? Are parents spreading out in the stands? Coaches, what changes have you made to keep your players separated as much as possible? We're at 800-642-1234. Ken Bigler Jr. is commissioner of the Wisconsin State Youth Baseball League. Ken, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much for having me on this morning, Kate.
Well, the season got underway this week, runs through August 15th. How are coaches and players getting back into the game?
Well, I think what we're seeing is very positive. We've been trying to let this play out as long as possible so that we could obviously be as prepared as we could for all the changes that are kind of popping up, you know, based on the situation we're obviously under. So I think it's kind of been a mad scramble as we were getting into the month of May and now into June, to just try and get the kids as ready as possible and try to find as many open spaces as possible to get them ready to do so. But what we're seeing is the coaches, we've had a handful of games get underway so far, and everybody's really adapting to the changes very, very well, and everything's gone very smoothly so far this week.
Give us a sense of how many teams the league has, how many players.
Yeah, it's a fairly good size. We started off with 183 teams as of this past fall. We actually added seven because there were some teams that were kind of strictly tournament teams or teams that found themselves without a place to play that were wondering if they could still get some games in with us this summer. So we ended up with about 190 teams, and there's about, on average, 12 kids per team. So it's quite a few kids and families that are joining us this year. There'll probably be somewhere in a normal year, there's probably in the neighborhood of 2,000 games that get played over the course of the summer.
Wow. Are there any teams that cannot participate for whatever reason it is, whether they can't get a field or they don't have enough players to field a team?
Yeah, there have been a handful. What we had done early on is send out a bit of a survey to all of our teams, all the league presidents and coaches, to kind of get a feel for what they were thinking and how things were going on their end and as far as what their families were saying. And the response was extremely positive as far as everybody really wanting to do whatever they could to stay involved. It was probably about a 95% rate of, hey, let's do whatever we can to prolong the season, which is what we did this year, going to August 15th normally. It ends about the third week in July, and just give us the opportunity to play as many games as we could. So basically taking that information and kind of went back to the board and talked this whole thing through to see if there's any way we could make it work. And I'm really glad we were able to do so.
What is your protocol, Ken, if a player or coach tests positive for COVID-19?
Well, in that situation, we're obviously going to follow the CDC guidelines. And we're obviously on total alert and making sure that the coaches understand that if anybody shows up at the field with a fever or under any type of illness or situation where they obviously shouldn't be there, they're sending them home immediately. We're obviously asking the parents as well to not send them in the first place, right? To not take any chances if their son is ill at all. So that we don't run into that situation.
Would the team get tested, though, if you did find out that there was a positive test on the team?
Well, again, my understanding is that if that were to happen and it were to be reported, and again, we're trying to make sure that the coaches are completely up-to-date, transparent, making sure they're letting us know if anything were to occur. But if any young man were to end up testing positive, my understanding is the CDC, we would take our direction directly from them as to what would occur once that was to be found out. So obviously that would have significant ramifications to the future of that particular team. And obviously whoever they would have played or have been playing. And that would be, you know, a situation we would have to deal with if it were to occur.
We're talking with Ken Bigler, Jr., Commissioner of the Wisconsin State Youth Baseball League. We're talking about youth sports during the pandemic and baseball getting underway for young athletes. With your questions and your situation, is your child enrolled in a summer sport? Maybe they play baseball. Has your team been able to find practice fields? We're at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Ken, last month, the Wisconsin American Legion Baseball Association board voted to cancel the season. What did you see there in that decision?
Well, I was quite surprised that they did make that decision. I guess I'm not as familiar with the American Legion. I know that the high schools, obviously, the spring seasons were canceled in regards to spring baseball. And so I don't know if that played part of the decision or played into that. But obviously, the high school kids have been in a different situation as well, simply because the schools are not in operation, so they're not able to use their facilities. So that's been a much bigger issue, I think, for the high school kids and their ability to get started. I believe it's before July 1 at this point where they could get on their fields at all.
And so that also probably encroaches on the field availability for your teams that use those facilities if they're closed through June 30th.
It certainly does. We knew going into this that was going to be one of the bigger issues presented. But what we've really seen is pretty cool. From my chair anyway, I've seen the coaches and the organizations really working together well to try and come up with as many options as they could. And obviously some of the teams and communities are not able to get fields, but some are. So those teams that are not able to get a game at their own facility are traveling as much as they can. And just playing more games a little bit further away from home than they normally would, but certainly, you know, willing to do so at this point based on the situation. So I think it really varies community, right? Where, you know, some communities are a little bit more open and others not quite so much. So we're really kind of just handling it on a daily, weekly basis as we move forward. But everybody really is working together to see, you know, what we can do to just get the kids on the field playing.
Yeah, since the season started later than normal, teams have had to do a lot of rescheduling. Can you get enough games in?
Well, again, that's another issue that was presented or that we're facing. I think most teams will not get as many games in this year, but it really will, again, depend on the field situation. And the other thing that comes into play are the tournaments. A lot of these teams schedule tournaments on the weekends throughout the summer, but a lot of those have been canceled. So I think many of the teams will probably be able to play some games on a Saturday or even a Sunday that they normally wouldn't have been able to play in a normal summer. So I think with that being the case, and of course we have a situation where they can play doubleheaders as well, especially on a weekend. So I think that is going to allow for us to get enough games in, or we're shooting for a minimum of 10 in order for each team to kind of qualify for that divisional championship, if you will, that we normally have in place. And I think that's going to be doable based on us getting going at this point and giving them until mid-August and then having the extra opportunities during the weekend.
We're talking with Ken Bigler, Jr., Commissioner of the Wisconsin State Youth Baseball League, talking about youth sports as the state youth baseball season gets underway this week. Is your son enrolled in a summer sport? Which one does he play? Are you concerned about getting back into action amid the pandemic? 800-642-1234. Back in a moment on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're talking about youth sports, how baseball is approaching the summer season as play gets underway this week. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Youth sports is big business. Market analytics firm Statista says it's more than $19 billion industry here in the U.S. And with stay-at-home orders lifted, leagues are left to figure out really whether games and practices can go on. Coaches, umpires, and team managers, how do you social distance on the field and in the stands? Parents, will your child participate in youth or rec sports this summer? How did your young athletes react to the news? Be part of this. 800-642-1234. We have Ken Bigler Jr. with us, commissioner of the Wisconsin State Youth Baseball League. He stays with us. So, Ken, what social distancing guidelines have you put in place on the field? What's different?
Yeah, I think it's pretty universal when you look at any tournaments that are operating right now or any league, that there's obviously been a slew of changes that have occurred. I think there's about a half a dozen that are, again, pretty universal to the situation at hand. First of all, we're not sharing equipment at all. Obviously, the kids are used to kind of sharing catcher's gear or maybe even sharing bats, although that's just, you know, something we're just not able to do this year and not doing. The umpires are umpiring behind the pitcher's mound now instead of behind home plate, which, again, I think is working out pretty well under the circumstances, but that kind of helps the on-the-field type of social distancing situation. The kids, there's only three allowed in the dugout right now, and the rest are either bringing a chair and sitting behind the dugout, or they're sitting in the stands, and the parents are now being asked to bring their own chair and sit down the foul lines or in the outfield so that they're spread out as well.
And then, so
from what I've heard so far this week, it's working out pretty well.
And then are there like opportunities for hand sanitizer, or how, you know, what kind of access is there to cleaning equipment?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, each team, and I think you're seeing each organization is being very responsible with that situation as well, where each coach is bringing their own to the games. We're certainly kind of have a laundry list of things, wipes, hand sanitizer, that they're bringing to each of the games so that's available in the dugout at all times. We're not sharing any water bottles or snacks or anything like that. Of course, everything's labeled and they have their own. So there's none of that going on.
How do you handle baseballs?
Yeah, that's another situation that comes into play. Each team is having to provide a few more baseballs this year than they normally would based on the circumstances, but each team is being asked to label their baseballs. And then when their team is on defense and their pitcher's pitching, they have one of the baseballs that they brought that's labeled for their half inning. And then when they come off the field, the other team is using their baseball so that we're keeping as much as possible that situation under control. And then if there's a foul ball, each team has a designated person that runs after it and grabs it and then wipes it down before it goes back into play.
There are a lot of things to keep straight here. And I'm wondering, can kids remember all of this on the field? I mean, their natural instincts will kick in.
As far as the game itself, that's kind of the beauty of baseball. I mean, they're just going to play the game as normal. And there is quite a bit of social distancing that's built into the game. There's obviously tag plays or plays that are going to occur throughout the game that don't allow for that. But I think for the most part, it's a game that we can still play, I think, safely at this point with all the things that we've put into place. It's a terrible situation that everybody's under, but I think everybody is very aware and from what I'm seeing is really taking the guidelines and everything that we put into place very seriously.
We're talking with Ken Bigler Jr., commissioner of the Wisconsin State Youth Baseball League, which got underway with play this week. We're learning about youth sports amid the pandemic with your insights and the decisions you've made in your family about your young athletes and whether they will get back on the field. Join in with your questions, your situations, 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Ken, you mentioned there no sharing of equipment. I'm wondering, is every kid equipped with enough equipment to play? Because, you know, maybe some kids don't have all of the equipment.
Yeah, I think we're in a pretty fortunate situation. And that's something, again, we've kind of asked the coaches to chime in on as well or make sure that's the situation. Most of the kids these days really do have their own bat, their own helmet, what they're going to need to play. And the catcher's gear, I think, is the trickiest part, because especially for young kids, that can be a little bit more expensive and might be a little bit more difficult for each of them to have their own. So it's kind of on each organization to make sure that they have enough sets of gear so that that particular player that doesn't have their own, or you know, however many catchers they have on the team, that they have enough sets of gear that they can supply, you know, throughout each ballgame that they're at.
How are coaches handling this when they want to call plays for their team, when they desperately want to huddle their team and get a plan and you can't do that? That must be really, you know, frustrating for them.
I'm sure it is. I think you're seeing a lot less of that going on in between innings, right? A lot of times they'd call the team in and kind of group huddle. There's not a lot of time for them to be able to do that, even in a normal situation, because there's only about 90 seconds in between innings. So it's really not affecting things all that much. But obviously there are a number of things like that they're having to definitely change, or it is not part of the norm. So it is a situation where they'll have to adjust, and we'll have to see how this goes throughout the summer. But so far, everything seems to be going fairly smoothly.
So after games, are the handshakes, the celebrations, those can't happen. What do you do instead?
Yeah, each team is being asked to go down the line and kind of tip their hat, if you will. Kind of have a team congratulations or good game. Thanks for playing, kind of a thing. And that's basically what it's coming down to, because yes, we can't do the normal handshake thing like we normally would. So that's again another adjustment, but something that's occurring.
Have you been looking around the country? I noticed that, in the St. Louis area where I have family, I've got a young nephew who's back on the field pitching. And there was, I think, on Mother's Day weekend, a tournament with hundreds and hundreds of kids. What do you see going on around the country?
Yeah, I have heard of some of the bigger situations that are going on. And I know early on in the month of May, some of the tournaments that were just getting started were having to actually alter the rules of the game a bit, where they were not allowing the kids to steal, where they were not allowing the first baseman to hold a runner on at first base if a runner was on first base. Mm. So I think there was things that they were, you know, implementing that did kind of affect the game a bit more, or change the rules, if you will. It's hard to tell how that will continue, or if it will continue as we get into the summer, and how things continue to change and evolve as far as what we're hearing from the CDC and the numbers, as to each. I think, again, it really gets tough because each state and each community is kind of in a different situation based on how the numbers are coming about as far as the number of cases and how each area is being hit. So you're kind of having to adjust based on how things are going from community to community and state to state. So that's been kind of the most difficult part, is to just kind of every day, every week, kind of just pivot and do whatever is necessary to keep the kids safe, but to continue to alter whatever, you know, has to be altered in order to do so.
Sounds like a pretty fluid situation, and you're just taking it one game at a time. You're taking it one week at a time.
Very much so.
What would you consider your toughest challenge right now?
I think it's exactly that, that this situation is extremely fluid, and it has been since this all came up in mid-March, where everything started to occur. So we've been meeting on a weekly basis as a board. We've been continuing to talk a lot more and keep on top of things, of course, and communicating with league presidents and coaches so that we make sure that we're continuing to stay on top of the situation at hand.
What take-home message do you want for your players and your families right now? What type of assurance could you leave them with?
Well, I think at this point, it's just been really important to give the kids an opportunity to go out and play. Obviously, every family, everybody is in a different situation, and it's really unfortunate. Some kids have pre-existing conditions. Some parents or grandparents, or you know, we kind of know that what this thing is affecting a little bit more so in regards to age and pre-existing conditions than others. But just to give the kids an opportunity to go out and play, because I think my wife and I have three of our own that play that are 14, 11, and 9, and we can see how it's really affected them, you know, not being around their friends, not getting a chance to participate in some of the sports and some of the activities that they normally do. So to give them the opportunity to do so, to me, has been really important. And of course, every family has to make those tough decisions based on the current conditions we're under.
Ken, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me this morning, Kate. Have a great day.
You too. Ken Bigler, Jr., Commissioner of the Wisconsin State Youth Baseball League, back after this news update on the Ideas Network. We're spending the hour on youth and rec sports amid the pandemic. Thanks for joining us on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Youth sports leagues and organizers are grappling with when and how to return to play without centralized guidance as their professional counterparts. No top-level pro tennis events are scheduled through the end of next month. Wimbledon was slated to start later this month. It was canceled for the first time since World War II. A decision on the U.S. Open could come any day now. Does your young athlete play tennis? Are they playing on a team this summer or participating in matches? What new guidelines have come down? We're at 800-642-1234. Pam Hammond is executive director for the Wisconsin Tennis Association, which is part of the USTA, the U.S. Tennis Association. Pam, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So the USTA had suspended play through the end of last month, which applied to all branches across the country. How is it working now with young athletes getting back on the court?
Well, we're just starting to roll out our programming and talk with our parents and our third-party providers, which are our clubs and our park and recs and our community tennis associations, to try to find out where they are. In the state of Wisconsin, a lot of it is being guided by what's happening in each of the different counties. So we have some areas that are starting to have some activity, and we have others that are still on hold. Pretty consistently, we're holding off in this first phase, I guess if you would call it, of anything that's more team-oriented, and we're leaning towards more of our singles play or independent play.
All right, so what about, like, the tennis balls themselves? Both players would be touching the tennis ball. What are your precautions there?
Recommendations that we're making is that if you are going out and playing with friends on courts or booking time at a facility, that each player bring their own can of balls. Be sure and mark the balls some way so that you know that they're yours, with an X or a dot or a number, an additional number if you want. And then pretty much saying that you should really only be using the ball that you have marked as yours, so use that for service. If an opponent's ball happens to come over, you know, kind of use your foot to pick it up and bounce it back over. In a drill program with our providers, which are very small groups, if not private at this time, we're having the teaching pros use the ball hopper with strictly balls that they feed, and they're the only ones that touch them other than the player hitting them with their rackets. And then on the back end, when the player is done, we're asking, you know, players should probably really wipe down their rackets, both the strings, the handles, the grips, everything, with some type of Clorox wipe or hand wipe, just to get off anything residual that might be there.
How much access do these athletes have now to tennis courts? Schools here in Wisconsin have their campuses closed through June 30th. How does that affect tennis?
Correct. It is a little frustrating, especially with the gorgeous weather that we've recently had. In some of our counties, our park and rec organizations are not umbrellaed into the school districts. So we do have some counties that the park and rec courts are open. The other thing we're encouraging our younger players from like 5 to 12 is to get out and hit on the driveway with their parents or their friends that are, you know, in the close area that they're in or people they've quarantined with. We're also doing some driveway challenges right now that were started by Roger Federer, where they bounce them up against the wall and see how many volleys they get.
That could take a while.
Yeah, believe it or not.
With Roger.
We've had some kids post some TikToks and Instagrams that, you know, they've been over 100 hits, which is very impressive for a young player. So there's ways you can get out and you know, partake. And then our clubs that we deal with, most of the clubs in the community, in the district are back open and have open hitting opportunities. So there are some other ways besides just, you know, being outside.
How do the points work, the rankings work right now as branches start opening back up?
Right now in the competitive tournament world, those rankings are still being frozen. And until we get consistently reopened across the country with some of our larger tournaments, those will consider this, they'll still be frozen. We're trying to keep it equitable for all of our competitive players because we, you know, they're working towards earning those points. So we want to make sure we're fair.
How is communication like right now across your association and what is happening in all the different counties and areas? Do you feel like you're understanding what's going on, you know, around the state with tennis right now?
Well, it is. It's a little difficult. We have to do a lot of calling. Our staff spend a lot of time in the markets where we do have programming because we want to make sure we're abiding by any local ordinances or health codes that have been set forth and, you know, the number of people that can gather or whether or not their park courts are open or their facilities. So we spend a lot of time on the phone just checking out what's going on. We talk with our directors that we have. We also have local league coordinators in pretty much every county in the state. And we talk with them and have them find out, you know, keep us posted about what's going on. That kind of helps us move forward on what we're doing.
And you have roughly 3,500 young tennis athletes that are part of Wisconsin's league.
We do.
How are you communicating with families?
We have a couple different ways. In our registration process system, we have what's called the Communication Center. So it gives us a direct access to a membership base. We also do a lot with Constant Contact. We use all the social media platforms. We do a lot of Facebook pushes. We've just been allowed as of June 1st to start activating those communication pathways. And then, of course, we have our website, wisconsin.usta.com, that people can connect to any of our staff to get assistance to.
We're talking with Pam Hammond, Executive Director of Wisconsin Tennis Association, which is part of the USTA. We're looking at youth sports amid the pandemic with your insights. Are you a kid who plays league tennis? Do you play in a league over the summer? When is your first match? What are you thinking about? Maybe you're a college athlete. How have you kept up with your game during the pandemic? What about conditioning and practice? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. The USTA has a variety of junior tournaments that are scheduled this month. Are these going on as planned?
We have about half of the tournaments that had originally been scheduled that will be holding their tournaments. We really left this up to the providers because we wanted to make sure that they were comfortable with rolling out what their facility or their outdoor courts could handle. And again, what their county, what their health departments were putting forth. So we do have some that are happening down in the Racine-Kenosha area. And we have a lot of youth activity picking up in Elkhorn at this time. So we're anticipating we'll see gradual movement as we move further into the summer and get into July and August. And as people get more comfortable with the new norm.
It seems that tennis might be in a better position to handle the impact of COVID-19 just based on how the game is played when it's not in a team environment. Are you optimistic about that?
We are. I think we do have some more options maybe than some of the other sports because we do have independent play, which is where they compete as an individual, whether it be in the tournament pathway, versus in addition to the team concepts. So we do have an arm of the game that we can roll out at this time and feel confident that if we work with our players and our parents and help them to understand the importance of the social distancing and some of the guidelines we put forth, that singles probably can happen at this time. The other thing is a lot of our competitive players have coaches they work with or independent teaching pros. And so if they, again, follow the guidelines that are set forth, there's really no reason why they can't be training with those individuals because there is a big distance between two people being on a court.
When you look at the high school players in particular, they often have clinics and they have camps to prepare for their school season. How do the clinics and camps go on or not? Have they been canceled?
The bigger camps at this time are on hold, and I think there's some that are still hoping to get something off the ground. The bigger problem they're running into is many of these are overnight camps, and what do they do with the dormitory situation? So we have seen some of our local community tennis associations that are running much smaller group dynamics where they're only going to have four kids at a time in a session. So there is some opportunity for that. But, you know, with tennis, the great thing is all you need is a hitting partner. Get out on the court somewhere with one other person and bang out a whole bunch of balls. that will keep your skill set up. So
it also might get out some frustration and some pent-up energy that we might be holding at this time. You know, in terms of conditioning, what are you telling your young tennis athletes who have been off the court for quite some time?
Well, right now we have a program through netgeneration.usta.com that has been doing all kinds of online tutorials on fun things that people can do in their yard or on their driveway. And there's different foot drills and hand-eye coordination drills, things that are very simple to do without any additional stuff in their racket and maybe a tennis ball. We also really support cross training. So just getting out and riding your bike, going for a run or a walk. I mean, just keeping, you know, some of your cardio up too is just as important as how many balls or how many serves you can get in. So we also participate with the Go Doodle, some of the online formats that are out there to keep athletes active. So yeah, we've engaged with them through this time and just we've had some fun competitions of send us your photos and giving away some prizes and stuff. So trying to keep them busy.
We're talking about how the tennis world is adapting to COVID-19 with Pam Hammond. She heads up the U.S. Tennis Association Wisconsin. How is your tennis player approaching play? Does your child usually attend a sports camp over the summer? Which camp and for what sport has the sports camp been canceled or postponed? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Pam Hammond here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The USTA, the U.S. Tennis Association, is expressing cautious optimism on its COVID-19 guidance. It says, because tennis does not require any direct person-to-person contact, players can enjoy the many physical and mental benefits that tennis offers so long as you practice physical distancing. It goes on to say that although there is no specific evidence that tennis balls can spread COVID-19, we know that contamination by respiratory droplets from an infected person can potentially survive on hard surfaces up to 3 days. What do you think about youth sports and tennis play this summer? Still time to talk about it. 800-642-1234. We have Pam Hammond with us. She's executive director of USTA Wisconsin. So, Pam, the USTA issued facility grants to help tennis organizations reopen, including facilities here in Wisconsin. How much money was given out?
In Wisconsin, we did almost $56,000.
And how will that money be used?
We asked that the clubs use it towards anything that they had to ramp up and the interruption of their service and coming back into play. So things like adding a hand sanitation station, or if they need to bring in a company to clean their courts in a different way, or if they want to use some door mechanism where the doors open automatically versus having to have hands on the doors all the time. And, of course, one of the biggest things is allowing them to add additional tennis balls so that they can rotate out and practice having the teaching pros work with one hopper of balls. And that's, you know, that can be very expensive. So we really want to help our clubs get back out there and get back into the game and make it so it's not such a hard transition for them, having come out of not being able to have revenue for a few months.
Have you heard from these clubs that these grants are really helping in a way that they otherwise couldn't carry out?
Sure. We definitely have had some nice conversations and thank yous for, you know, recognizing that it was going to be a hefty endeavor for them, both financially and time consuming. So, yeah, I think it's a good partnership. And I think the USTA tries really hard to support our private providers as well as our local park and rec groups. So anything that we can do to help is out there.
Pam, how is tennis doing here in Wisconsin?
We're holding steady. And of course, I have the adult and the junior market. So on the junior side, we are seeing an uptick in the recreational play. We're seeing the competitive pathway take a little bit of a dip. And, you know, I think that's maybe a sign of the times where families are rethinking on their commitments to expensive sports and to things that require a lot of travel and just a lot of time. But on the recreational side, we are really seeing growth in our communities with our Boys and Girls Clubs and our YMCAs and our school programs where they're bringing back the racket sports. And we're pretty excited about that. So it's kind of a shift.
During this time of social distancing and the ebb and flow of COVID-19, what is your greatest challenge? What are you grappling with?
Probably working with the parents to where they have a comfort level, where we all feel safe, where we all feel like it's a good time to come back and get into our bigger events. Our big, you know, district closed tournaments or our big junior team tennis events where we bring in 52 teams. And that's going to take a while for everybody to get to that point.
What can you tell parents right now to maybe help put them at ease?
Well, we're doing everything that we can to make a safe environment. And we definitely are pushing the opportunity for players to work on their singles game to get that into play, because a lot of parents, you know, will pick one side or the other, and this is maybe a time to explore that other side. But we're also telling them that, you know, you need to be ready. You need to be ready to have your players participating, and if you're not comfortable, that's great. We're still going to be here. We just want everyone to feel good about, you know, getting active again. So,
Pam, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Pam Hammond is Executive Director of USTA Wisconsin, and earlier we talked with the Commissioner of the Wisconsin State Youth Baseball League, Ken Bigler Jr. And now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with more on a musician's new project with PBS Wisconsin called The Light.
Jalarina Sanders is an artist who does it all. Her craft is steeped in theater and music, so...
music, composition, and writing, so both the instrumentation and the lyrics.
Plus playwright, actor, graphic and visual artist, and nonprofit founder. Jalarina grew up in Tampa, Florida, and was raised in an artistic family.
Oh, yeah. I come from that dirty, dirty, that stirred dirty, where the curb is perfect, eating hot dogs in the church parking lot, my daddy four wheeler in three parking spots, you wanna come up.
My uncle, my mother's brother, is an MC, and he was the first person that I ever personally met that rapped. I heard him rap one day, and he showed us like his mixtape, and I think I was maybe 5 or 6, and I asked him to show me how to put together a bar and then a verse, because I had been watching Da Brat a lot in TLC, and I wanted to do what they did.
Not long after, Jalarina started writing her own raps. that led to slam poetry in high school, and eventually she became a cohort in University of Wisconsin-Madison's First Wave program, which integrates hip-hop and arts with traditional studies. Jalarina's music is taking center stage again with a new PBS Wisconsin digital series, The Light. It features a series of music videos exploring love and identity.
Each song exists in the whole set. So it's three different songs, and I am playing myself and my mom.
It addresses a difficult moment in their relationship, but Jalarina is excited to share it with her mom.
Life has great moments and it has not so great moments. So to talk about and work through and make a show of the not so great moments, it's been a challenge, but it's been so fulfilling and edifying to be able to take very personal moments and create the world that existed around them like 10 years ago in a set. That blew my mind.
Of course the parent was cooking. Of course she was stressed. Of course I jumped in front of a bullet train with a text. Of course she read it loud with throw up in her mouth. Of course I couldn't breathe enough to lie, get it out.
Jalarina's inspiration doesn't just come from her family. She says so many things push her creatively.
The gospel every day. That is like a whole world of inspiration. And then being around artists who love to play, I know some of my best work has come through me just sort of like playing around and enjoying just the creative process without the pressure of making something good.
Jalarina got her undergrad in psychology and master's in counseling psychology at UW. She says that knowledge absolutely plays into creating music.
So, for example, I have a song where one friend is talking to another friend and telling her, hey, I know that you're probably depressed, but we don't have to use that word. However, I'm here for you and let's talk.
I know. You good, sis. But imagine what it'd be like if you're gonna let me help you get through this. Cause it bless me to bless you. Whoa, baby, God bless you. If it's hard to walk this thing out, I'ma make another beat for you to step to.
I have music about like my own struggles and just me sort of like dealing with anxiety or dealing with my ego or like whatever the case may be. People often suffer in silence and alone, and I want my art to be the enemy of that.
And I mean that death, where is your sin at? We was watching when that resurrection flipped your weed back up.
I'm constantly trying to produce work that would encourage and uplift. I was born knowing that I'm an artist and I create, and that's what I want to do forever and ever. Amen.
She was 5'3 with the nerve to find me. Squirming with the yearning to switch up assigned seats. Immaculately wrapped in a package of prime beats. With lyrics that describe what the laughter of God means.
Jalarina has made the move from Madison to Atlanta, where she's working on a number of projects. She's wrapping up a new album, releasing one song a month. She's also working on her second one-person show. To see Jalarina's videos featured on the PBS Wisconsin digital project, The Light, head over to wisconsinlife.org. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. I'm Maureen McCollum.
Coming up, we talk with the head of Vivant Health. It used to be called the AIDS Resource Center of Wisconsin. We learn about what it's like to live with HIV amid the global health crisis. This is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Ideas Network.
I try to hide my phone, so imagine the stress. When I up and jumped in front of a bullet train with a text.